after her jaw had gone, an important discovery was made. Kniff had always hoped that by removing a tooth or a piece of infected bone, the progress of the mysterious disease would be halted. But now it became evident that whenever a portion of the affected bone was removed, instead of arresting the course of the necrosis, it speeded it up. Over the summer, Molly's condition deteriorated even further. She was getting painfully sore throats now, though she knew not why. Her jaw, at times, would spontaneously bleed, and Edith would press white cotton bandages to her face, trying to stem the flow. September 1922. In Newark, Molly's former colleague Edna Bowles was preparing to wed. Her husband-to-be was Louis Hussman, a plumber of German heritage with blue eyes and dark hair. He was devoted to her. She laid out her accoutrement with touching anticipation. The bridal gown, her stockings, her wedding shoes. Not long now. Not long now. They are words of excitement, expectation, and reassurance to those in pain. Not long now. In September 1922, the peculiar infection that had plagued Molly Maggia for less than a year spread to the tissues of her throat. The disease slowly ate its way through her jugular vein. On 12th of September, at 5 p.m, her mouth was flooded with blood as she hemorrhaged so fast that Edith could not staunch it. Her mouth, empty of teeth, empty of jawbone, empty of words, filled with blood instead, until it spilled over her lips and down her stricken, shaken face. It was too much. She died, her sister Quinta said. A painful and terrible death. She was just 24 years old. Her family knew not what to do with themselves, knew not what could have happened to take her from them so suddenly. She died and the doctors said they didn't just know from what, remembered Albina. The family tried to find out. Albina added, "My elder sister went down to Dr. Kniff's office. We were told after her death that she died of syphilis." Syphilis. What a shameful, sad little secret. The final medical bills came in, addressed to the girl's father, Valerio, and labelled for Amelia. Her family doctor reduced, on request, the amount he charged them, but though it was a welcome gesture, it couldn't bring Molly back. They buried her on Thursday, 14th September, 1922, in Rosedale Cemetery, Orange, in a wooden coffin with a silver nameplate. It was inscribed simply, Amelia Maggia. Before they said their goodbyes, her loved ones laid out her clothes, her white dress, her stockings, her black leather pumps. Gently, they clothed her body in the garments, and then Molly was laid to rest. Her family hoped that now, at last, she would find peace. Chapter 6. Ottawa, Illinois, United States of America, September 1922. 2 days after Molly's funeral, and 800 miles away from Orange, a small advertisement appeared in the local paper of a little town called Ottawa, in Illinois. "Girls wanted," it declared, and then continued. "Several girls, 18 years or over, for fine brushwork. This is a studio proposition. The work is clean and healthful. Surroundings pleasant. Apply to Miss Murray, Old High School Building, 1022 Columbus Street." It sounded wonderful. Ottawa was a tiny town, population 10,816, located 85 miles southwest of Chicago. It billed itself as a genuine American community in its town directory, and those words were on the money. It was the kind of place where its banks proclaimed themselves to be, where friendliness reigns, and local businesses advertise their location as being one block north of post office –